This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy All Media Year End Roundup Part 1, brought to you by Graphically.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy.com 2011 All Media Year End Roundup Part 1. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
I'm very, very excited.
This is truly an exciting moment. I look forward to this all year.
We are iFanboy.com, and we like comics, and normally we talk about comics every week on this show, but we also like other media. Every year since 2006, we've been ending the year with an all-media roundup podcast where we talk about movies and TV and music and video games and books and also comics, too. Everything we loved in the year 2011. So before we get going in the show, a reminder, this is a review show, so we'll be talking about TV shows and movies and things that happened in them. So if you are waiting for the DVD release or you are waiting for the Blu-ray or Netflixing a movie and you haven't seen it yet, you might want to skip the segment because we might spoil something and... you know, they'll suck to be you. So be careful.
Yes.
So we're going to start things off and talk about movies and TV in part one. So movies.
Well, wait, should we disclaim movies that these are movies we enjoyed aside from the comic book movies that we talked at length about?
Yeah, we did a show for each comic movie that came out. So if you want to hear our thoughts on those, go to those. We're going to exclude those to talk about non-comic stuff. Also, I feel like it's worth mentioning that most of the really good films get released in December for award consideration. And we record the show in December, so it's hard to see all the really high-profile movies that come out. There's a bunch on my list I haven't even seen yet. I haven't seen Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. I haven't seen Hugo. There's things like that.
The Artist.
The Artist.
Yeah. You know, Descendants.
It's hard to see them all. So a lot of people wonder where's Hugo talk. Well, it's, you know.
Yeah, but we're gonna probably see a lot of movies by the end of the year, but we didn't just get them into the show. But actually, I was looking at the lineup for December and that sort of stuff. And I think it was a good year for movies, at least for me. And I saw a lot of ones that I would consider some of the best of the year that came out way prior to December. So
sure, there's a lot of high profile big ones that are out in December.
Yeah, and one other quick note on the comic book movies. Great year for comic book movies. Just we should adjust that between Thor, Captain America, X-Men First Class. I mean, it was a banner year, and it was really a lot of fun. I mean, I for the first time in years, I bought all the Blu-rays when they came out. Like, I was just so excited for it. So definitely go back and search the feed or the site for those podcasts to hear what we thought of those movies.
And next year, G.I. Joe
and Avengers and Batman. And,
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
This is the 3-year cycle. This is 2008 was the great year.
Yeah.
And now 2011 will be the great year. Yeah. I'd worry about next year. I'd worry about it.
Yes. All right, well, let's dive in. So Josh, lead us off.
Well, I didn't get to as many movies in the theater this year, but the couple that I did get to go see, I enjoyed a lot. And one night, my wife and I managed to find a babysitter, and we went to see Bridesmaids. And it was like I guess we'll go see this. you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I like Kristen Wiig. It's fine. But the movie was a lot better than I had expected. And I'm going to go out on this is what I would say about that movie. Melissa McCarthy's performance in it was the funniest cinematic performance I have seen since Will Ferrell in Old School.
Yep, agree.
That's how funny it was. And because it was so completely unexpected, I was in tears. I was laughing so hard it hurt, and I just had a ton of fun. And it was just a lot of really good things in that movie, right down to Chris O'Dowd from the IT Crowd, the British show. Yep. And I just thought it was a hell of a fun movie. Yep. and done in a different way than a lot of – it had that gross out effect that a lot of them did, but it was less so, and it was – you know, it had heart and it was fun.
It's also a big deal because it's an all-female
– Exactly.
Well, it was billed as like the female Hangover almost, you know, like in that regard.
It's much better than the Hangover.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I didn't see this because I had wildly different reactions from people I know who saw it. Some people loved it. Some people absolutely hated it.
Really?
Which caused me to push it down the list. But
and you have not seen it yet?
No, I haven't seen it because of that.
No, but Ron, you did go.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you that it's funnier than The Hangover. I really did enjoy the first Hangover.
It's the second one,
I'm not sure. But the, you know, definitely in The Hangover, Old School, that kind of vibe, you know, the kind of, like you said, the gross app. But it was good. I thought, yet again, John Hamm steals the show.
He just so desperately wants to be a comic actor.
I mean, he was just,
he'll do any movie. If you're shooting your own home movie and it's a comedy, he'll show up.
He'll do it. Yeah, he totally will do it. But, yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. It was I went into it kind of begrudgingly. Somebody, you're like, okay, fine, let's go see that. Like, there's nothing else to see. But it was good. It was a good time. So.
And I'm a dude saying this. So I want, you know, dudes, give movies with chicks a chance.
Yeah. Why not?
Because chicks can be funny too, is what I'm saying, without being patronizing.
All right. So for me, there were several key tentpole movie releases this year that I was very excited for. And one of them.
you're the only person who's referred to this movie as a tentpole movie.
And I think you'll make
an emotional tentpole.
Yeah, I think you'll make the same when I identify my other tentpole movies. You'll do the same reaction.
Yes.
But for me, this year was all leading up to the Thanksgiving release of The Muppets, the return of The Muppets to the screen after being, what was it, like 11 years since a theatrical movie release? After ownership changes, after all this shit that went on behind the scenes. But it took, you know, Jason Siegel and his bizarre obsession with Muppets to deliver us the first Muppet movie in a long time. And I gotta say, while I loved the movie and gave it a solid B+, A-, and I had a couple of reservations and a couple of problems with it, no other movie rendered me to bawling tears more times than the Muppets did.
And you saw it multiple times, and it happened every time.
Yeah, I saw it twice. What? Yeah.
What made you cry? I laughed.
Well, I cried three times during the movie.
Yeah, there were – okay, so I was tearing from laughing so hard because there were some jokes and stuff like that. No, but the straight up like crying happened three times. I'll go from the back to the beginning. I totally teared up. And teared up, like eyes welled up at the end when they walk out and
everybody's cheering for them. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Rainbow Connection performance during the telethon just got me. You know, like when the music swells and the lights come on and all the Muppets hold hands and they go forward and like I was like, oh god, because that just sums up the Muppets. But the one crying thing that got me the worst, and I was sitting next to Mike Romo, who writes for iFanboy, and I had to like sit there with my hand covering my side of my face because I didn't want him to see that I was bawling.
And he was doing it too.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And I had something in my eye, and that's a valid excuse. But no, the scene, the moment that got me, and I don't know what it was. Well, no, I don't know what button it pushed inside me. But when they started the telethon, and Kermit takes that deep breath, and then opens the O in show, and I'm getting teared up just talking about it. And
wow.
and he goes, "It's the Muppet Show," you know. And they do the intro to the Muppet Show, and the archers come in, and they do the dar, you know, "It's time to play." That opening, I just lost my shit.
I had a different first one. The first time I cried was when they go visit Kermit at his house and he's sad and he's looking at the old photos and he's sort of tinkling the piano.
Yeah.
And I started getting emotional because it sort of represented the way they've been shunted to the background.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And then Rainbow Connection, like Ron said, when it first started, I didn't start crying. I started bawling.
Really?
Like to the point where it was uncontrollable. It was all of a sudden I was like 8 years old again. It represented so much of my childhood. It was so visceral.
Well, that I think that's why I lost it during the intro to the Muppet Show because whether or not I remember it or not, but like me and my sister grew up watching the Muppets. I mean, between the Muppet Movie, the Great Muppet Caper, and watching the Muppet Show, and I remember being on the floor in my living room in Comac on Long Island, watching like every Friday night watching the Muppet Show. And like even growing up, I remember my library, the library in my elementary school had the Muppet Show book, and it was basically like a picture book, kind of like a comic almost, of the Muppet Show, and all these little vignettes and all this stuff like that. And every year I would take that book out and have it for like a month and just hoard it and read it, and I just love the Muppets. And it totally, that intro just brought all that back, and I kind of forgot. Like, that's the thing.
Absolutely.
So it was really into the Muppets.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So now, I mean, I probably owe it to everybody to share what my complaints were, though.
I didn't have the same ones you did, only because I was so caught up in enjoying it.
Well, that's the thing is it was genuinely funny. There were some great, very funny moments. They had I loved when the whole premise is they need to raise $10 million to buy back the theater, and when at the very end of the telethon and Fozzie hits his head on the sign because they came a penny short, and the sign blinks and turns out they only raised like $99,000, and Fozzie goes, "Oh, we weren't even close. I don't feel so bad now." I lost it. Like, there was that great kind
Actually,
of...
I had two problems now that I think about it, but go ahead.
Okay. So, but the thing was is that I totally acknowledge that the nostalgia and just having the Muppets back totally was almost like a distraction to like don't pay attention to the things that you have a problem with. And it wasn't until days later where I thought about it. I was like, wow, this really kind of bothered me. So here are my complaints. The whole Jason Segel, Amy Adams characters, plotline, romance, you don't need. It was completely superfluous. But I understand why it was there. I understand. I get it. You know, I understand movies and names and celebrities and things like that. I thought for a movie called the Muppets sure weren't in it a lot. I thought there was an over-reliance on the new Muppet with Walter, and that while we had little moments, we had Gonzo's moment, we had like the going to get the car trip, going to get everybody together. It was really kind of very slim on true Muppet moments. So because
having a billion characters is antithetical to the typical three-act
story. Right, but if you look at the previous movies, they were able to balance it. Like the old movies back in the day, they were able to balance it perfectly. I think the Jason Segel Walter characters took away from like
the story.
Yeah,
but that was not right.
I understand.
They were in the center of it. The fact the final shot was Walter.
Well, yeah, it should have been Kermit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then more specifically, I thought I wanted more moments with my favorite Muppets. And it doesn't even have to be like a larger thing. But like, for example, in The Great Muppet Caper and The Muppets Take Manhattan, there's a great gag that they did in both those movies, which is when all the Muppets are talking and they're all arguing and whatever. And then Kermit yells, "Quiet!" And then everyone shuts up except Janice. And she's going, "And I told him, I don't take my top off for anybody." You know, like, and then she realizes that she's the only person talking and stops. That's a 30-second quick gag that you could do that ties back to the legacy, or 10-second gag, and we didn't have it. And so examples like that. And then my biggest complaint was just in terms of with the songs and the music, like I love the music aspect of the Muppets. And I thought between the opening number and Amy Adams By Myself song and the Am I a Man or a Muppet, they all focused on Jason Segel and Walter. And the one moment, the one chance that we had to celebrate the Muppets from a music standpoint, when they're going to clean up the theater and Dr. Teeth goes, "Well, all right," and presses play on a boombox and they play We Built This City. Like, that should have been an Electric Mayhem song. That should have been like Can You Picture That from the Muppet Movie, or like what, you know, like that. It was a perfect opportunity to create a great new Muppet song, and they went with a fucking 80s cover.
Yeah.
It wasn't a cover.
It wasn't even a cover. Yeah. I mean, just an 80s song, a straight up 80s song. Like, it was, yeah. So
Jefferson Starship.
Yeah.
They were very busy cleaning up.
I know, but still, but you could have, you know, Dr. Teeth could have pulled the tarp off the instruments and they start playing, and that would have been perfect. That's just me.
All right. Summarize.
But so B+, A-.
I loved it.
Despite
my problems with it, I loved it.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. Despite my problems, I loved it.
I had a hell of a lot of fun in the movie, but I don't have any of the emotional things that everyone else does.
Yeah. I got choked up talking about it.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. Super 8 was the big J.J. Abrams film this year, and I thought it was the best Steven Spielberg movie this year.
I surprisingly enjoyed it.
I really had a good time. I didn't see it right away like most people did. I saw it like a month after it came out, but
yeah.
I had a great time at it, and it really did feel like an old Steven Spielberg movie.
Yes,
it
took place
really
in the 80s. It's even shot kind of like a Steven Spielberg movie. There's a lot of art direction in it.
Guys, I saw it in the theater twice.
Twice? Wow.
That's right. Well, I went and saw it by myself once, and then I grabbed Lindsay and said, "We have to go see this." It was one of the very few. Yeah, that's...
The moment those kids said mint, I was in.
The kids were great. The fifth time they said it,
I was like, "Stop!"
No, because that's how we used to talk, man.
Yeah, that was an 80s slang.
Yeah.
It was about, you know, an alien comes to the small town, and the coach from Friday Night Lights is the sheriff, and he's a bunch of kids, and it was totally. I think this is sort of nostalgic, like Muppets, but it was totally a throwback 80s movie. There'll be another one of those in a few minutes, but there's a lot of wonder in the movie, in the way that you don't get anymore, and it was not ironic wonder, and it wasn't like.
No.
it wasn't at all cynical. It was totally making a Steven Spielberg movie, which, you know, J.J. Abrams may not make super original movies, but he does do a good job.
I like it. I like his work. I like it.
No, I do too. Yeah. Star Trek was fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Great kid actors, really. And that was the thing that made the whole thing hang together.
Yeah.
I think was that just the actor, I didn't know who any of them were.
It was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very funny. I mean, there was lots of thrills and chills, but I thought it was more than anything. It was very funny.
It was like watching Goonies.
Yeah. Yes. It had a very Goonies-esque. Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
That was a ton of fun. Next one up is Limitless, which I managed to, the way that I've been catching up on these movies, to see them on Netflix or have them sent to me as soon as possible for the most part. And this one was actually on Instant Now or Watch Instantly. I just sort of watched it as a lark because I was like, oh, this will be like a B movie.
I had the same. I was on a flight and I never watched the movies like on Virgin or whatever. So when I fly Virgin, you got to pay for the movies. But if you're in main cabin select, they're free. But usually I never watch them because either I'm sleeping or whatever. But for some reason, I was on a flight and I was wide awake and I just didn't have anything on my laptop to watch. So I'm like, oh, I'll watch this Limitless. So the same on a lark, just like you, Josh. Yeah.
And I like Bradley Cooper a lot as an actor.
So
I don't think I don't think he has a ton of range. I'm be honest with that, but
a lot of movie stars are like that.
For people who read comic books for a living, I was like, oh, this is a really cool superhero, not exactly kind of story. It's a superpower story, and it was shot really well, and it was used the cinematics of the idea of having these strange powers. Basically takes a pill and it heightens everything he can do.
It increases
100% of his brain.
Yeah, yes.
I wrote a pitch about that years ago.
Yeah. Watching it, I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if like Boom put out the series it was like that kind of like interesting take, kind of could be real, but also fantastic.
I love the blackout parts where like they would just cut and you'd be like, what the fuck happened? You didn't know and you don't know and you've got to go with it. And there's all this fear that went along with it. Really amazing action scenes especially near the end, just the way that the sequences were laid out and how things went down. It was a really fun science fiction movie dealing with a sort of version of superpowers. And if the comics folk who are listening haven't seen it, it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, it's one of those it kind of was under the radar, and I was like, this is really good. Mm-hmm. De Niro was great. I mean, like, it was it was actually sure. you know what was so good was that I didn't finish watching the movie on the flight. Like, I had to stop, we were landing, so I had to stop watching it like with the last 10 minutes. And then like I got home and I'm like, is it on Netflix? I need to see how this ends. Like, it was,
I saw it on Netflix also. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. It was a solid movie and it was interesting and it was unusual, which was good. I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but it was a very solid movie. I enjoyed
it. And that's the best way to end. Interesting and unusual. It just wasn't the same thing, but it totally like kept my attention.
It was actually really funny. I was watching it and there's a scene in the middle where he takes the pill and he cleans his apartment up. You know, he like sort of fixes his life, and it's a metaphor. At that moment in time, the audio dropped out on my TV.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, really interesting choice to go silent with this scene. And then it kept going. And I was like, wait a minute, something's not right here. This is wrong. So I had to go back and reboot everything.
It's very funny. Similar to Limitless, a movie that didn't make the list that we cut right before, but in the same category was Source Code. Surprising. Yeah, surprisingly fun, that sort of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, in a different way, but very, very similar. I really enjoyed that one too.
Okay, so
don't spoil this next one.
Well, that's tough.
I couldn't get to it, and I want to see it.
Yeah, so I honestly, in my short list of best movies of the year, I've got to put Drive on there.
Drive was not what you expect, so much so that a woman sued over it.
Yes.
$10?
She sued that it didn't look like the trailer. The movie she saw wasn't what the trailer made it out to be. That really happened. Anyway.
Yeah. But I went into it not knowing very much about it. It was very polarizing. I saw everyone arguing on Twitter about it. And I loved it. And then I proceeded to have like an hour-long argument with a friend of mine on the phone who hated it about why he hated it and all that stuff. But for me, it felt like an 80s Michael Mann like a kind of movie my parents would go see when I was a kid. You know what I mean?
It was an 80s Michael Mann movie made as an art house movie.
Yes. Yep.
With an art house aesthetic. And it was shockingly violent.
Yes, yeah. But it was also but it was also like it hit on so many levels. I mean, the story was fairly transparent. The story was fairly simple in terms of what happened. But deep relationships, subtle relationships, amazing soundtrack, flipping the switch between emotions and relationships and connections and then right into violence, like the scene in the elevator car.
Yes.
Yeah. So like it was just great. And again, the soundtrack, I've been listening to the soundtrack. Soundtrack is great to work with. One of the best soundtracks of the year. It totally surprised. Albert Brooks
is fantastic. Yeah, Ron Perlman. It's basically, yeah. I mean, the story without spoiling it is a stunt driver in Hollywood is also a getaway driver for criminals, and he gets in over his head. That's basically the story.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling is the lead, and he was great in a lot of stuff this year.
I got to say, I have turned around on Gosling. I have completely, I had no opinion of the dude. I knew about The Notebook, stuff like that. Never really saw anything. Earlier this year, I saw Blue Valentine, which came out early this year, and I'm pretty sure it was this year, and I feel like it's going to get ignored come Oscar time, but it should, because I thought both Gosling and Michelle Williams were amazing in that. That was a gut punch. You walked out of that, I wanted to throw up, but in a good way. That basically chronicled they're a couple, and it concurrently telling the story of them getting together and then them breaking up and all the stuff that happened in between, and it was so real and it was so honest. And it was
also had Ides of March and he had Crazy Stupid Love, which was surprisingly quite good. He had 3 to 4. Blue Valentine was actually last year, but
was it last year? Oh shit! Okay, well there you go.
He had 3 really strong movies performances this year. I think because he really broke out this year.
Yeah, this is, I mean, to the point where I don't agree with people's sexiest man alive thing. I should have been Gosling.
I could not finish the Esquire profile on him.
Yeah.
But that's really, it's sort of, I don't know, it was just stupid.
Yeah. Well, I don't know anything about the dude, just in terms of his acting.
That might be the writer's fault, but that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
I should add, hey, I'm shocked that they made a biopic on Milo Ackerman.
I kind of got excited when I saw that. I was like, really? Yeah. And then, it's not.
It's not. And then listen, don't blow this for me either.
If you've listened to the show for the last 6 years, we've done this all media show, you know that the one thing that holds this group together is our shared love of George Clooney. And without that, we would have splintered apart years ago.
That's a weird phrase.
This year was The Descendants, which is one of the big movies I made a point of seeing when it came out, one of the big December releases. And it is a fantastic drama. And it's George Clooney you don't expect to see or normally see. He's playing a dad. He's kind of rumpled. He's kind of dumpy. He's just a normal guy. And not to spoil it too much, but it's basically a guy whose wife is in a coma and she's not going to come out of it. He's sort of coming to terms with the fact that he's got to take care of his daughters. He's got to come to terms with the fact that he finds out his wife was having an affair. And there's this whole subplot that he's a descendant of super rich original Hawaiians. Him and his family own all this land, and it's coming up where they have to sell it, and everybody in Hawaii wants to know who they're going to sell it to and what they're going to do. There's developers who want the land, and that's the whole point. That's the whole title of The Descendants.
Who's the director?
Alexander Payne, I believe.
Right. He did Sideways, right?
Yeah.
He did Sideways, and he did Election.
Isn't it written by the dude from Community?
Yes.
Yeah. Co-written
by the dean.
No, the dean.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really sweet, really funny, really goofy. I mean, it's sort of the perfect Clooney vehicle. He's charming at points. He's goofy at points in that sort of Coen Brothers way he sometimes is. He's a good dad at points. I mean, it's a really solid drama, the kind they don't really make much anymore, but it's a perfect Clooney vehicle. And if you're a George Clooney fan, you have to see it.
Yeah, that's a movie I'm going to see this winter, this holiday winter.
Plus, the great thing about it is that it's a movie that takes place in Hawaii. But it's not like we're going to Hawaii for a trip, or there's just people just living their lives in Hawaii. You know,
right.
it even opens up where he's doing a monologue about how I live in Hawaii. Everybody thinks my life is a vacation every day. I'm drinking Mai Tais. I'm hanging at the beach, and it's people whose wives are dying or having affairs. It's just a backdrop like any other.
And paying a lot more for goods.
Yeah. Well, he's quite wealthy because he owns the land. So.
Either way. So I saw a trailer for Hesher, and I thought that's interesting. I kind of want to see it, but it's starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Now, a lot of people like him. I'm not a fan.
I love him.
I know you do. Everybody does. It's just me. I totally can give it that. I didn't know what it was, but I went and got it anyway because it's basically about this weird metalhead dude. except it's not. It's a lot more than that.
Isn't Natalie Portman in it?
Natalie Portman is in it.
Yeah.
And even more impressive than that is Rainn Wilson.
Yeah.
Basically, he's the father of this kid. This little kid is the main... the story is about him, and Rainn Wilson's his father, and Wilson is devastated because the mother has died. And if you only know him from doing Dwight and other versions of Dwight in other things, he will break your heart in this movie. I was like, that it's an amazing performance by him. You know, overall, this, I don't know if the story is the greatest thing on earth, but the characterizations of the people in it are so well done and so interesting. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt was fascinating in this movie. He's hilarious.
He's a really good actor. He's a really,
he's
really
this
good
metalhead
actor.
Dude who just doesn't give a shit about anything, like at all. And you've seen some movies about characters who just like don't respect authority or anything, but it really goes a long way, and it's very funny.
I love the choices he makes.
Yes.
Yeah. Besides that, it takes place in Los Angeles, and it pretty much takes place now. But it, like, kind of like Connor says, when you say Los Angeles, there's a certain kind of Los Angeles that most people think of. This is the other part of Los Angeles. This is, you know, south of Los Angeles, south of the 10, you know, where it's just sprawling suburbs and mini malls and, you know, people, just working class people. And it has this weird aesthetic of, you don't really know. It takes place now, but it kind of could take place in the 70s. And it could, you know, like, has that sort of
Drive,
like,
has that feeling.
Yeah, like it's deep in the valley somewhere, like, you know, way north in the valley. And just, it's this great, odd feeling that I think really captured something about Los Angeles that not enough movies do anymore. I really enjoyed it. And I laughed a lot at the beginning, too, because every time he would show up at the beginning, they play selections of Metallica really loud, just like as a soundtrack to him coming into the room. And then it stops. It's totally worth it. It made no money. I don't think anybody saw it, I think it's worth it.
You did.
Some friends of mine saw it and really didn't like it. I was surprised.
So you're wrong, Josh, apparently.
I thought it was really interesting. Yeah. Ron,
this next movie, I feel bad that I didn't get to see.
I'm really upset that you didn't see it. So what it might have been Tron. It was some movie last year, holiday season, whatever. I forget what movie we saw it, but we saw the trailer for Real Steel with Hugh Jackman. And I was with a bunch of my friends here in San Francisco, and we immediately all just, like, mouths went agape, and we're like, robots boxing? Awesome! And so, like, so got so excited for it. They were at, I believe, and Josh was bared witness to this. I'm not normally one to get caught up in the promotional aspect of things at San Diego, at the San Diego Comic-Con, or anything like that, but on the side of the street, the Real Steel street team was giving away t-shirts, and I had to have one. So
he walked up behind a crowd of 40 other people, stood there for a second and a half. They threw a t-shirt directly to him, and he walked away.
So this, in addition to the Muppets, another tentpole movie for me was Real Steel. I've been waiting all year for it, and it delivered on every level.
It got great reviews.
It was fantastic. It was great. I mean, what's really cool. So it takes place in a near future. You don't really know exactly what year it is, but it's in the future. But everyone still drives cars and things like that. But the technology, the cell phones and computer technology is advanced. It's a little more Star Trek-y. And basically, it's a world where humans have stopped boxing and instead they have robots, and humans can control the robots, and that's what the new boxing kind of thing is. And Hugh Jackman is a down on his luck. He's an ex-fighter who's trying to catch a break, and he gets a robot and he loses and he needs to borrow money and gets beat up and stuff like that. And he fathered a child 10 years before, but didn't stay in touch with the kid or the mother, and the mother passes away and he gets the kid dumped in his lap, and they spend a summer together, and he teaches the kid the kid connects with the robots and it's fun, and then the kid finds a robot in the junkyard and they clean it up and they start training, and it's this like little sparring robot that shouldn't be a contender, but with Hugh Jackman's boxing skills and this robot's special kind of tenacity, they're able to climb the ranks and they go all the way to the top. It's basically Rocky. Like, no, it's a little bit of Rocky. It's a little bit of over the top. If you remember the Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie.
Who has forgotten over the top?
It's a little bit of that with science fiction and robots. And it was like, it was a blast. I strongly recommend it to anybody. It was a lot of fun. The robot fighting was great. It was emotional. It hit on every angle. It was so much fun in the movies. It was great. I loved Real Steel. It totally delivered. Again, a movie that I called my dad. I'm like, you got to see this. So
did he?
No, he didn't. He does. He didn't answer the phone.
One of the best movies I saw this year was Moneyball, and I'm going to attempt to not go on too much of a tangent about how much of a fiction it was or how it's a celebrating Billy Bean's attempt to ruin baseball, but
That was a movie that you and I were dying for also.
Moneyball was a drama starring Brad Pitt about the Oakland A's general manager attempting to turn around his team, which was, you know, going nowhere, and written by Steven Zaillian and Aaron Sorkin, two of probably the best screenwriters in Hollywood right now. And it's fantastic. It's a fantastic drama. Brad Pitt is very subtly brilliant in this movie.
Yes.
He's not a showy role. He doesn't really get big speeches or emotional moments, but it's a very elegant performance. And I thought even Jonah Hill was good as not J.P. Ricciardi.
Yeah. No, wasn't he not? He was Ricciardi. Right. Yeah.
It was about, you know, one man trying to buck the system. And as a fiction, it was great. Yeah. The title card at the end was complete fiction. It was almost, I started laughing in the theater about how much of fiction it was. But as a movie, as an entertainment piece, it was wonderful. The performances were wonderful. The directing from Ben and Miller was wonderful, and the script was great.
Yeah.
It's a baseball movie, but it's not really a baseball movie. It's not about the team, even though the team is in it, and it's about the team winning. But it's more about the guy trying to change everything around him, which I thought was great.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And it's also... Personally, for us, like for me, that was right during a time period when I was really into baseball and I knew every player.
We were at one of those games that they
we were.
That they showed me and you.
Yeah.
It was good.
My one thing about it was I thought it was really interesting in that and we talked about this when it came out. I was like, I'm really curious what that movie would have been like if it came out before The Social Network was done. Because it really wanted to be Social Network, like Social Network-y.
Oh,
but in terms of like but like, you know, the shot, like people just kind of looking in like a plinky piano music, like it was very reminiscent of The Social Network in terms of structure and format and that sort of thing.
Well, but, it was the same writer.
Well, but Sorkin didn't write. Sorkin did a pass on it. Like Sorkin
he
did
didn't
the,
write it.
No, someone else wrote it, and Sorkin did the last polish.
Well, Cezalian wrote the screenplay, and Sorkin rewrote. So I assume a lot of those elements are probably because of Sorkin.
Yeah, no. The thing is, it lacked the Sorkin. It didn't feel like a Sorkin movie to me.
Oh, I was very excited because of that. Because I do not like sports, but I like sports.
No,
movies.
You should still see it. You should still see
don't
it.
Don't worry.
But yeah, you should still see it. But not. But it didn't. It didn't have the fast paced dialogue and like all the trappings of Sorkin, because I believe he was working off of somebody else's stuff. It definitely had those Sorkin elements. But those elements of The Social Network that I'm talking about, I think, are less of Sorkin. I think it's more, you know, Fincher esque, more in the direction than in the script stuff. So
I imagine that you have to pay Aaron Sorkin quite a lot of money to do a polish on your script at this point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know who I am? One of my favorite writer, director, filmmaker people is Tom McCarthy. You may know him as an actor in a bunch of things here and there. He's sort of that guy. But you may also know his previous movies, The Station Agent, which is literally one of my favorite movies of all time. I really love that movie. And then that other one that came out with Richard Jenkins, whose name I can't remember, that I didn't really like as much.
Oh, The Cellist.
Yes.
Like
no, it's not called The Cellist, but it's like that.
It was something like that, yeah.
His wife died and he met the guy on the street and they... illegal immigrants, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Win-Win stars Paul Giamatti. By the way, that's enough sometimes to go to a movie.
That's
Paul Giamatti's in it? Sure. He is a small-town lawyer and wrestling coach. And
saw the trailer for this movie.
Oh, God, it was so good.
Was it?
It was maybe better than The Station Agent because Giamatti was helming it and Bobby Cannavale is in it. And if you saw The Station Agent, he's really funny in that. He's funnier in this. Like, it's just like an uplifting sort of
the
movie.
Visitor
about
was the old movie.
The Visitor, that's the name of that movie. Yeah. I loved every bit of it. Like, I just sat there. Like, I can never make it through a movie all the way without getting distracted or having to go do something. And we just sort of sat there and watched the whole thing. And it's just a fun, very small character-based movie. There's no high concept about it. It has to do with wrestling, you know, but it's like this kid who comes in is inspiring and is a family tale. And just a really good movie and a strong script. Totally take the time to go see it. It was one of my favorites of the year.
Similar in terms of strong script and favorites of the year, I got the opportunity to see a advanced screening back in early November of Young Adult, directed by Jason Reitman of Up in the Air fame and written by Diablo Cody, who wrote Juno, and Jason Reitman directed Juno. So kind of
this movie looks great.
And it was fantastic. It was but part of the script was cool. Part of the screening was, so we got to see the movie, and then afterwards, Jason Reitman, Diablo Cody, Patton Oswalt, and Charlize Theron were there to do a Q&A. And by the way, Charlize Theron is just impossibly gorgeous. Like in person, like, oh my God. Like kind of like when Connor, were you with
Mr.
me?
Mr. F.
No, Connor, I don't think you were with me, but when I was in New York City and I think I was at a Rufus Wainwright concert. And
the Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet, yeah. And Kate Winslet was just like in jeans and an army jacket and a ponytail, but she had this like aura around her. And it's like, like she's just gorgeous. But yeah, so the movie is about a woman in her late 30s who's a young adult children's book writer, a young adult writer. She ghostwrites for like the Babysitter's Club series or whatever. You know, she writes about these high school kids, and she's living in Minneapolis and living like a pseudo metropolitan life, but she's in Minnesota, so it's not like she's, you know, New York or LA glamour. Like, it's still in the middle of the country. And she randomly gets they do very well, like, single woman in her late 30s, you know, like brutally honest, you know, like out with a guy, comes home drunk, passes out, wakes up the next morning in her clothes, you know, drinking Diet Coke. And I imagine there's a lot of women who are going to watch this and it's going to be like looking in the mirror. But she gets an email that her old boyfriend from high school and his now wife just had a kid, and that inspires her to go back to her hometown to try to steal her boyfriend from high school back, like try to get him back. and it becomes this like black comedy, deeply disturbing, dark events of just like social embarrassment, but amazingly honest, amazingly true. Patton Oswalt plays a misfit kid who she went to high school with. Of course, she doesn't remember, but he remembers her. He got beat up in high school because the jocks beat him up because they thought he was gay, and he's walks a little limp now because they screwed up his leg, broke his pelvis, and stuff like that. And she meets up with him in a bar, and they kind of connect. And he's telling her not to do what she's trying to do, and she tries to go after the boyfriend. But the relationship between Charlize Theron and Patton Oswalt is really interesting to watch happen. And it was just Diablo Cody, say what you will. I know some people, a polarizing name, what people think of Juno and other things that she's done. This is a great script. It was a great story.
Well, I read that she really toned it down, the sort of jokey pop culture-y dialogue. But yeah, I really want to see this movie really, really badly.
Yeah.
A few months ago, my girlfriend emailed me saying, hey, I got tickets for the Conan movie. And really? So I was like, oh, that's weird. So I said, all right. So go to the theater, and it wasn't the Conan movie. I thought it was Conan the Barbarian. It was Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. So I was like, oh, that makes more sense. This was a documentary about the time when Conan O'Brien was fired from The Tonight Show, and then the road back to television. Basically, it's a chronicle of his road show that he did to live shows all over the country, ending with his getting the job at TBS. And like Ron just said, there was a Q&A with Conan O'Brien and the filmmaker afterwards, which was really interesting. But I'm not a big Conan O'Brien fan. I enjoyed his stuff, but never really watched the show. But it was a fascinating documentary and really open and honest. I mean, he comes off at times looking awful.
Oh yeah, no, I watched this on Netflix and I walked away from it like liking him less. Like I'm not a big Conan fan.
Oh, I liked him.
Yeah, I'm not a big Conan fan. I don't watch the show. I watch some clips online, stuff like that. But like after this, I was like, oh, I don't really like him at all.
Are you kidding? No. See, I actually saw the show. I went to see the live show back in January. And I had the most fun I'd had all year at a thing. Like, I laughed I think he's incredibly funny. I don't watch talk shows just as a thing.
I think he's funny, and I think the show elements are funny. Turned me off was all the behind-the-scenes stuff, like the moaning about why are we doing this, and why, don't go into something if you're not prepared to deal. I get that's what makes this documentary compelling, to see him complaining that he's got to meet people and that they're throwing parties.
I mean, like, that was the thing that to me was, like, at what point is his life not his own? And the thing was, even though he's complaining to people who were very close to him about it, he gave every single person that he met his full attention.
Yeah, true.
100%. And I thought that was really impressive. He's like, I don't want to go out. You knew he didn't want to go out. And listen, I understand that. And I'm saying that on a very tiny, small level. Like, right. There are times where, like, I'm like, I don't understand.
I mean, I definitely do too. But the thing is, now, like, don't go down the path then. That's my point.
Every entertainer has that personality.
But multiply that by 100. By 10 million. Yeah. I mean, you get to think about like the massive drain that had to be coming out of it. And I thought it was really brave to do that look. The other thing that came out of this documentary is that Andy Richter is the funniest person on earth.
Yes, he absolutely is.
Every single time he opened his mouth in that movie, it was pure gold.
He was just so like on the side. It was just,
and
like,
he had no stake.
Yeah. No, he's just having a ball. It's like, whatever. I'm just going to do this.
It's like at the end when the tour ended, he's like, best summer camp ever.
the show was fantastic, by the way. Yeah. I had so much fun.
There were some really cool moments, like the secret show they did at Jack White's studio. That looked really cool. Some of my good friends are really big Conan fans and loved it and totally ate it up. But I don't know.
It was a fascinating documentary. If you're all interested at all in television or behind the scenes stuff like that, it was really. And John Hamm showed up again because it was a comedy. Heard it was a comedy. Yeah. So it came.
And he's married.
They didn't show the night that I went. They showed the other night.
Jessica Stein girl that he's married to. Remember her?
Yes. Pee Wee Herman showed up the night I was there. So
nice.
That's a win, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and there was the Pearl Jam cameo in Seattle as well. That's true.
That
Andy Richter goes, last time I lend Eddie Vedder my tambourine.
Every single thing he said, especially the stuff that was like backstage, not on camera, not on stage. Yeah. Speaking of Pearl Jam, I managed to get out to a screening of Pearl Jam 20 in a very tiny theater in Boston, which I thought was funny because it was on Netflix like a week later. Yeah. I was like, oh man, I went through all the trouble. But I was really excited about the Pearl Jam 20 documentary. This is Cameron Crowe directing the 20-year retrospective of Pearl Jam, a band who I'm not going to say is my favorite band, but they're one of the more important bands to me if you sort of look at how old we are and, music and sort of the path of popular music over our lives, I would say. And I was super excited to see it. And the performances in it and the footage was really interesting, but I felt that overall it didn't deliver what I wanted. And I was really disappointed about it. The more I thought about it, the more – and I'm talking about it here because it stuck with me in a way that I just wanted it to be something else. They glossed over a lot of stuff. I guess it was really good, like if you kind of liked Pearl Jam. but didn't really know anything about them. But if you knew anything about them, like Mike McCready, the lead guitar player, had he has Crohn's disease and he had prescription drug problems also, and they glossed over it so fast.
Yeah.
And it was like a big part of the story. And then at the same time, Pearl Jam's had like 8 drummers. They're like Spinal Tap.
Yep.
And again, it was only there was like a throwaway line in the movie about that. And it's one of those things that we don't know anything about. So in one way, they said like they were going to give Cameron Crowe access to everything. But I don't feel like he took advantage of it. I don't feel like.
Well, I think that's a case of – I think it's a case of he might be – because he's known them for years, you know, going back to singles.
He was too close.
Yeah, I think he was – exactly. Like that's – when you told me all these kind of comments about it, I was completely not surprised because it's not like it was an investigative documentary going behind the scenes. Like the band, you know, they probably controlled a lot what was being showed,
Making a documentary about his buddies. I mean,
Yeah, yeah, like if we do the iFanboy documentary, we're not going to talk about Connor's raging drinking problem.
No. Or Josh's just racism.
That stuff stays off camera. I mean, that's, you know, so.
Like that Ron's a communist. It's not a big deal.
Listen, you have no proof.
It isn't even just that he's their pals. It's that he idolizes them. Like he wants to be a rock star. We've seen Almost Famous. We've seen that's all true. That stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's entertaining. The most forthcoming person in it is Stone Gossard and Jeff Ament. They're really interesting people. Like the guys in the band, like you come out of it liking them. You realize like – Eddie Vedder is a strange person, but he's also sort of really funny. There's a couple of really great moments in it. It's worth watching, but we're going to talk about a book later on, which is sort of the opposite of this, that sort of is giving me what I think I was missing in this. But yeah, it's worth watching still.
So one of the biggest surprises for me in terms of movies was Midnight in Paris.
Yes.
Completely on a large, like, so for those who don't know me very well, whatever, last year as well, I tried to adopt, like, I'm going to go to the movies every week, every Sunday night, I'm going to go to the movies. I didn't stick to it because of travel and stuff like that. And there was I think I saw a total of like close to 30 movies this year, which is pretty, not bad, like in theaters. But Midnight in Paris was one of those ones where nobody was around. It was quiet, like early summer, you know, nothing was going on. I couldn't find anybody to go to the movies with. And there wasn't anything really playing, but I really wanted to stick to this. I'm not a big Woody Allen fan. Like, of course I enjoy Annie Hall, but I'm not one of those people who watches every Woody Allen movie. I'm not a big Owen Wilson fan, you know, like I've enjoyed him in the past, but lately it's just kind of, you know, like whatever. But I was like, I'll give it a shot. I go in to see Midnight in Paris and was completely enamored with it from the moment it started.
You have to go into it, and it's sort of antithetical to this discussion, but go into it knowing nothing about it.
Knowing nothing about it, yes, exactly. And so, like, I almost skip. So, if you want to see it, skip ahead. Don't listen to what we're talking about.
Yeah. But I can't. I'm sitting right here.
But basically, the premise is that, you know, Owen Wilson is a struggling writer who's.
No, he's not struggling.
He's not struggling. He's doing well. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he's struggling in terms of his.
We're just used to putting that word before.
But he's struggling in terms of his creativity. Basically, he's a screenwriter for Hollywood and writes very not deep, you know, not meaningful kind of things.
Makes lots of money, but hates what he writes.
Exactly. Yeah. And he really wants to write novels and things like that. He's in Paris with his fiance, Rachel McAdams, and they're there with her parents and the whole kind of thing. And, you know, he wants to go experience the romance of Paris, stuff like that. And she wants to go shopping, you know, so you get an idea that he's not on the same page with his fiance. He goes out one night to just kind of wander. Oh, what's his name? British guy.
Bill Nye.
No. He was on 30 John Rock, Cleese. Frost Nixon.
Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen, great cameo in Michael Sheen. Oh, like,
she's the ex-boyfriend of the fiance. And there's some weakness there, too.
Exactly. Some great banter, some great like Woody Allen-esque, you know, kind of arguing. And that, like, it was a lot of fun. But he goes off into the night, and an old-timey car pulls up and says, hey, get in. And so he gets in, and this car takes him back in time. And he's in the 1920s Paris, and where he meets F. Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway and Salvador Dali and all these amazing people. And he meets
Great Ernest Hemingway,
possibly the greatest. And he gets
to fight and fuck everything.
Yeah. And it just completely, you know, inspires him to start writing and stuff like that. And he figures out this portal. And every night he goes back to 1920s Paris. And there he meets a woman, Marion Cotillard plays from Inception, you know, fame. And they're kind of somewhat, you know, they've got some kinship in terms of what they want out of life. And then they figure out how to go back in time to her favorite time period. And they go back to the bohemian late 1800s Moulin Rouge time. And this whole concept of the time.
They get smallpox.
Well, no, the whole concept is that everybody is sentimental for the times they missed. That you wish, I wish I could have been around during this time. And it was really interesting to see that, you know, that kind of emotion being brought to life, and just a fun adventure, whimsical, like the most whimsical movie I've seen, the most romantic whimsical movie I saw all year. And it was a huge surprise, and I just loved every minute.
You'll fall in love with Paris.
Yeah.
Especially the opening is like a 2 minutes, just a montage of Paris.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. But the When that car pulled up, I was like, "What the?"
Yeah, it was awesome. But, and when he meets F. Scott Fitzgerald and his wife, whose name I forget, who's played by Kim Pine from Scott Pilgrim.
Yes.
Yeah. It was, and then this movie made me go read The Great Gatsby, which I'd never read before.
It was also really funny, and it was really ingenious.
Yeah. It was very genius. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Good times.
Now the big movie of the year, I think the highest grossing movie 2011, but also the most anticipated, I think, for most people was Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part Two, the eighth Harry Potter movie.
It's the sixth one I went to see by myself.
And this capped off the series of movies of the books, and I thought it did a really good job. When I first read the Deathly Hallows book, I thought it was unfilmable. They broke it into two movies and did a good job of actually making movies out of them, but cutting out a lot of the fat that was in the books. This, I thought it was the biggest challenge, and they succeeded really well. I thought it was an exciting ending. It was a satisfying ending. I had a great time at Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I don't tend to bring those movies up as a thing that are really, really impressive. And like, they're not quite the Lord of the Rings level for me. But then I think about it, it's eight movies in, what are we at? I guess 10 years. They managed to get kids who could play these parts.
And grow into the parts as the movies did.
Which is really impressive. And without, you know, the casting throughout the whole thing was just spectacular. All these wonderful,
it was the
British.
The best British actors working today in this series.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that it didn't get, well, to use an aphorism, bollocksed up. But it didn't. I mean, it held true to the whole thing, and it's kind of cool. And you can, it's funny because they really do all tend to blend together for me a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to remember specifically things about it, but they're wonderful adaptations of what were.
I think it's a great series. I have them all on Blu-ray except for the last two because I haven't got them yet, but I've rewatched them many times. I think they're great movies. Great fantasy action movies. Well, yeah, but the kids are, yeah, I know. You know, they are what they are. But I think on a whole, it's a wonderful adaptation. Yeah.
And I mean, the thing that always impressed me most about the books was the giant cast of characters. Like, there's all of these characters to keep track of, and they all got a unique face and voice in the movies too, by just really interesting people, and that's what made it work for me. So yeah, totally, really enjoyed that, all of them.
And that's eight movies in the can. I've never seen a minute.
Well, good for you. Are you proud of yourself?
No, I'm not proud. I don't care. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing it. I'm not saying, you know, like it's. I've heard everybody rave about it. I was listening to 11 o'clock comics a couple weeks ago, and they were raving. Because Vince went down to the amusement park that kicked off. They were talking about Harry Potter and all that stuff, and it's great. I'm glad everybody likes it. It's not for me. That's all. Just no interest. No interest. It's the new Master and Commander.
It's gonna really stick in Josh's craw. Right.
I don't need you to see that. I'm never gonna read Uncanny X-Force now.
You're missing out. So that sums up the movies of 2011 for us, at least 2 weeks before the year ends. It's a great year of movies. I mean, I was fortunate enough to see a bunch of them, and I didn't see a bad movie in the bunch. I didn't walk out of any movie going, wow.
I saw a couple of that were not as good as I hoped.
Yeah.
A Dangerous Method was not very good.
Didn't see that.
I don't even know what that is.
One of the new ones is Viggo Mortensen and Michael Fassbender playing Jung and Freud.
Oh, I want to see that because it's Fassbender.
It's there's no point in the
not
movie.
Really?
There's no point to the movie.
Okay, well, there's just no point. They just
yeah, it's just no story. Meandering.
There's nothing there. They're gone.
nothing we can do. All right. So we want to take a quick break before we dive into television. And we want to remind everybody that iFanboy is a part of Graphically. Our parent company, Graphically, makes this show and iFanboy.com and everything possible. So if you've enjoyed iFanboy in the past 20 years.
20 years? What happened?
If you joined iFanboy in 2011, you'll want to go to Graphically.com and make sure you patron that for digital comics. Over 5,000 comics from over 300 publishers. You got Marvel Comics, Boom, Image Comics, Archaea, Top Cow, tons of publishers on there, and exciting new stuff is getting added every day. You can read comics on the web, on your mobile device, on your iPhone or iPad or Android phone or tablet. And we've also got some great stuff. If you're an iOS 5 user, they've got the newsstand where you can subscribe to The Walking Dead and Invincible and Irredeemable, and some other great titles are coming there as well. If you got a Barnes & Noble Nook or an Amazon Kindle Fire, if you're getting one of those for Christmas, you can get The Walking Dead, you can get books from Top Shelf. There are just so many titles that are available that are all powered by Graphically, so definitely all check it out. Go to Graphically.com where you can find out all the information, and follow Graphically on Twitter.com/Graphically, and again, we thank Graphically for their continued support of iFanboy through the year.
A lot of people are going to get tablets for Christmas. And
yeah, it's going to be a big tablet
Check out books on the tablet. They look wonderful.
This is Mike LaFontaine here for Graphically Comics. What happened?
So now let's talk about television. We all love TV. We watch a lot of it. If there's one show I think that we all can agree that between the three of us we love and we often say it was made for us, it would be Ron?
A Boardwalk Empire, man.
Fuck
Holy
yeah.
Holy fuck. It is. Here's why I like Boardwalk Empire. And it's funny because the reason why I kind of slowed down on watching movies every Sunday was because of Boardwalk Empire, when Boardwalk Empire came back this past season. And it's like watching an hour-long movie every week.
Yep.
It's so cinematic. I love it. And it really is just The Sopranos in the 1920s. That's really all it is. It's just crime in New Jersey. So for those who don't know about it, Martin Scorsese directed the first episode last year, and he's one of the executive producers. Mark Wahlberg, our iFanboy favorite, is an executive producer. And it's basically telling the story of Atlantic City during Prohibition.
Enoch Thompson, the city treasurer.
Yeah, which I believe in real life he was Enoch Johnson.
Yes.
It's something like that.
Yeah, but Steve Buscemi plays Enoch Thompson.
He was like a huge linebacker-sized dude in real life.
Well, yeah, the reason that he did that is that the showrunner was watching Deadwood, and he, at the beginning of Deadwood, he's like, this is awesome. He went and he looked up everybody's names.
Yeah.
And then he saw that he could figure out everything that happened in the show, so he decided the way that he would combat that was to change the one guy's last name.
Smart. Yeah.
Except
it took me 2 seconds to figure it out.
That's kind of the point.
But yeah, so following him through Prohibition, he like kind of runs Atlantic City, runs the underground, and it's the whole bringing in booze into the city, all the politics, the underground crime politics, and the different, you know, the blacks and the KKK. Like there's just all these kind of other the local government and then
the Irish,
yeah. And but what I love about this show is I love the historical factor and I love the real people, like the fact that Lucky Luciano and Arnold Rothstein are characters.
And Al Capone.
Charlie, Sal, whatever it is you're calling yourself now.
Yeah, Al Capone, George Remus came in this season, who's like, if you watched Ken Burns' Prohibition documentary, you heard a lot about Remus, who was crazy. totally crazy. I love, especially watching the Ken Burns Prohibition documentary that came out like right around the same time. I love this time period because the country was just fucking nuts.
It was anything goes.
It was insane, and like Eddie Cantor's in it, and like it's just all this great stuff. Michael Shannon as the Prohibition agent whose just life gets ruined by going to Atlantic City is a great subplot.
No, he was a lunatic. It didn't get ruined because of Atlantic City.
Well, he was a lunatic, but Atlantic City was the catalyst that caused everything to go crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very repressed religious guy in a land of sin and gets caught up in it. You know,
here's something I can tell you about crime. I've read a lot of crime. I'm a fan of the genre, especially when we go back to period. But there's, to me, Jewish and Irish gangsters are the best gangsters from a fictional perspective. Manny Horvitz, favorite new character on TV.
Yeah, I don't agree.
He was so great. He was a ton of fun.
He was a lot of fun.
And at the same time, like having them go to Northern Ireland
I love Owen Slater, that Irish character. Yeah. He's that guy's dreamy,
and he's got that. He has that Northern Irish accent, and it plays against the stereotype that people sort of give to Irish people in movies.
Tough badass.
Oh, right, exactly.
Bodyguard.
He's fantastic.
The casual execution that happens in the background of the car as he drives away in Ireland, it's continually surprising, up to and including the season finale of the second season, where they just kill what's essentially the main character of the show.
Well, that's the great thing. Like The Sopranos and like other things that we watch or read, no one's safe.
And I have to admit, I didn't see it coming. I thought they were going to reconcile. He's going to go get his revenge on Manny, and he shows up, and they're all standing there with guns. And I went, oh no, they're not going to – oh, no. And then he doesn't shoot him once in the head. He shoots him twice in the head.
Oh, that was great. It was great.
Well, I think what was that was punctuated by the fact that really you had seen Nucky the entire season at his home life, and he was being a good husband, father, quote-unquote.
Up until leaving the finale, yeah.
Really. I mean, like way different than Tony Soprano. Tony Soprano, you saw all that stuff boil over when he got at home. Like when he was home, like you're like, well, he seems to be genuinely caring.
Yep.
And then at the end, it's that mask comes off, and it's like, no. He's a bad dude. And I thought that was a really fun choice that they played out for a long time.
The great thing is waiting for season three is that he's been screwed over and he doesn't know it yet.
Yeah. Yep.
She just gave away all his land that he's been courting.
And he's celebrating at the end with, this show is great. And I tweeted this out.
It's on so many levels.
At one point, I really want either like a web series or a spinoff of just Lucky Luciano, Arnold Rothstein, and Al Capone. Those guys, like that's the highlight. And the thing is, what's great about it is that they use them sparingly.
Yeah.
We're lucky if we get a scene with Arnold Rothstein in an episode. We're lucky if we get a Lucky Luciano scene.
Arnold Rothstein is a great character.
Oh, he's a great character. And what the guy playing him, the guy that was in...
The guy from A Serious Man.
A Serious Man. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's really good.
And like, I love the guy who plays Lucky Luciano because he's young. They're young gangsters, and like, they're not quite where they are yet. It's great. I just love it. And Gretchen Mol. I love Gretchen Mol.
They effed her character up.
Yeah, they did.
I love that Dabney Coleman was in it for a long time before I even knew it was Dabney.
Yes, me too. Yeah, I remember seeing him in the
credits. Dabney Coleman's on the show?
Yeah, exactly. I did the same thing.
He's the Commodore?
No, seriously, Boardwalk Empire, hands down HBO. Like, I know everyone's like, oh, AMC's where it's at, whatever. HBO comes back strong on Boardwalk Empire. It's so good. So good.
Well, a network that's really trying to become HBO is Showtime. They've had a lot of good shows over the years. Weeds and Californication, things like that. But Homeland, for me, was the best new show of the season. It started this year, and it's got elements that both Josh and Ron will like.
I don't know what this show is. I've just heard people talking about it.
The story of Homeland is a prisoner of war who was missing for 8 years in Iraq, is found, and comes back home. And the CIA agent who suspects that he may have been turned by the Taliban or Al-Qaeda, however you want, you know, whoever that is, and is going to be a terrorist now. So the question is, is he a terrorist or is he not? Or is the CIA agent crazy because she's bipolar? And the CIA agent is played by Claire Danes. And the soldier's played by Dick Winters, Damian Lewis, and Mandy Patinkin's the CIA boss. And there's so much going on in this show. Is she crazy? Because she's kind of crazy. She's got lots of emotional problems, and she's had a lot of trauma in her life. And we don't know if she's actually just paranoid, and this guy's back because he's just a soldier, or is he back because he's been turned and let go by Al-Qaeda? And there's a lot of intrigue in that sense, but there's also a lot of home life stuff. He's come back after 8 years. His wife gave him up for dead, and she was dating his best friend, who sounds exactly like Brad Pitt, to the point it was distracting. He's got kids who never really met him. And so there's all that stuff going on. There's the CIA stuff where, she's obsessed with this guy and it's ruining her career. And it just unfolds beautifully. It was the most tense. As we record this, the season finale comes up in 2 days. And I honestly can't wait for anything more than that right now. It's unfolding in this incredibly tense manner. It's all going to come to a head in the season finale. And it's wonderful.
I've heard really good things about it. And it's one of the things I'm going to catch up on.
It's the best Claire Danes I've seen in a long time. She's fantastic in it. I don't think I've ever seen. Ron, you'll look here in the show. Josh, everything else is up your alley, including they go to Gettysburg for a very pivotal episode. They have
all right. Sidebar. Mm-hmm. Californication, was that last season this year? Or was that last year?
I've fallen behind. I don't know.
I think whatever the last season one was really good, because the one before it was very silly, but then the last one was very good.
The one
where
he was professor was goofy. Yeah.
It was very was silly. Years ago. They just ignored that, basically. They were like, that never happened.
I haven't seen the most recent one because I was watching it on Netflix and fell behind.
Oh. Okay. There you go. Okay. That's fine. Just a side thing. I would say that Boardwalk Empire was a fine time. Absolutely. Very much enjoyed it. But I'd have to give the nod to Game of Thrones this year, which came from out of nowhere in terms of just giving me everything that I would want to see in a fantasy show that had no right to be as good looking or as well done as this.
This show defied all kinds of odds.
Totally. Yeah.
When it was first announced, I was like, wow, that's a huge gamble. And not just fantasy fans or comic fans or people who like that kind of thing already, like everyone watched Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Everyone I know watched Game of Thrones. The ratings were huge. It was a huge success for HBO.
Yeah. And again, another case of a show where it leaves you guessing, no one is safe. When it started, there was a lot of people who read the books, a lot of people reading George R. R. Martin books. There's a lot of hype and anticipation in the whole kind of geek world that we kind of exist in. And I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. Like, I don't want, normally I probably would have skipped it. Like, I just went, I'm like, oh, not really for me because I'm not really a fantasy guy. And I watched the first two episodes and I was just bored to tears. I was like, this is the most I'd rather watch them walk for hours on Lord of the Rings than watch the show. And then something happened like the third or fourth episode and it got me. And from that moment on, I was like, Sunday night, right in front of the TV, I cannot miss Game of Thrones.
And I had a similar reaction to you because I think the first episodes were rough because there was a lot of characters to learn. There was a lot of relationships to figure out. Yep. There was a lot of jargon to figure out.
It was just boring.
Were the places they were talking about? Who was related to who? How were they related in non-family ways? Like what was the structure here? It was hard to get a grasp of the world.
Yeah, yep.
But I think once you got the grasp on the world and the characters, it really sort of took off in the third or fourth episode.
And Sean Bean, fantastic.
Forget that. I remember watching that going, man, somebody needs to give Peter Dinklage an Emmy.
Yes.
And then I was shocked that they actually did.
I was so glad they did.
Because he was fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I'm not arguing, but it's just I thought no one will even notice this.
Yeah.
But oh my God, it was just a ton of fun and really just really great characters all over the place again. Yeah. Great actors playing them.
So the good. Question now is how long?
Basically, this is HBO going, hey, by the way, AMC, yeah, suck it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the AMC would never be able to fund this kind of show. Yeah. How long would this show go? I mean, like,
can it go through the books? The books are crazy, by the way. If you read the books, yet. They're nuts.
The books aren't even done yet. It's going to be 10 years for the books to be done. I mean, like, what is this? How are they going to end the show is the question, because it's not going to end with the books.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Unless crazy. HBO sends a guy over with a gun to George R. R. Martin's head and says, finish these right now.
Yeah.
Now, continuing a tradition of talking about things that are named after bands.
Yes. So a big surprise for me this year was a British show called Misfits. And it's not about horror or about Jerry Only or Glenn Danzig. It's about...
It's just disappointment everywhere I look.
Yeah. But I was in London in May of this year, and I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and we were in the music DVD store, and he pointed out a DVD set. He's like, oh, you would like that show. He's like, if you like the X-Men, you would like the show. It's kind of about kids who get powers or whatever. And I was like, oh, I kind of mental noted it. And then Hulu started running it for some – I don't know why they made a deal with Channel 4 in the UK. And so Hulu started – I'm like, all right, cool. I remember he mentioned that, so I'll give it a shot. And the show is fantastic. It's basically a group of early 20-something, you know, not teenagers, slightly older than, you know, like they lived by themselves and that sort of thing. But they get they're all doing community service. So they've got to go to this community center, and they're wearing the orange jumpsuits, and they're picking up trash. And a storm hits, and lightning strikes, and they get powers. In the first episode, they all realize they have powers. One can travel through time. One girl's a telepath. Another character can turn invisible. Another girl, if anyone touches her, they instant sexual attraction, and so it's kind of a rogue negative power. And then the other character is immortal. He can't die. So they get these powers. They're like, well, what do we do with them? And one of the characters is like, well, we could become heroes. And they all stop, and they go, no, that's an American thing. And they just live their lives. And all this weird shit happens to them, and the powers get involved and stuff like that, and it creates this whole world. And it's not—I don't want to say it's like a slacker comedy, because they're kind of slackers, but it's also very realistic. And it's like, what if people in the world had powers, and how would they deal with it? And it's just a ton of fun. The main character, who actually looks like Tiny Hank, a British Tiny Hank, he's off the show come season three. Season three just started in the UK, but season one and two, he's like the draw. He is hysterical, irritating, like the irritating, annoying, you know, loud, boisterous, you know, like over-sexualized, you know, 20, you know, early 20-somethings kid who wants to, you know, have sex with every girl and stuff like that, and we'll tell them. But like the show was like, when it first starts, you're like, oh, this is cheesy and whatever. It's like Heroes, whatever. But as you get into it, it becomes so engaging and enamoring, and they actually build an interesting world, and time travel comes involved. They're able to change their powers and all the stuff like that. And it's a slightly realistic take in the genre of what we like, but slightly offbeat. So it's on Hulu. You can watch it for free. I strongly recommend it to anybody.
I just added it to my queue.
Cool. Yeah. Anybody who watched and enjoyed Heroes, watched and enjoyed Smallville, anything like that, you will enjoy this. Period.
If you're going to compare it to Heroes, I can't watch it.
Well, no, but it's better than Heroes, if you ask me, because it actually
kind of has to be.
Yeah, it totally is.
Speaking of which, Smallville ended its 10-year run earlier this year, and I felt it would be we'd be remiss not mentioning.
Wow,
our favorite shows.
We got emotional, didn't we, Connor?
Yeah, no, I thought for a episode that had to end a 10-year run and also set up Superman as a character, the finale was a wonderful thing. Yeah,
it was great. The last 10 minutes, I've gone back and watched the last 10 minutes numerous times.
There aren't many super long-running shows left, you know, that have been on for 10-plus years, and Smallville's one of them, or was one of them up until this year, and say what you will, it had its ups and downs, it had its bad seasons and good. I thought this final season was really good. I thought the final episode was really good. I thought with no irony or hipster detachment or joking or snark, it was a really strong finale. It was emotional. It was action-packed. You finally had Superman. It ended the show the way you wanted it to end, yeah. I thought. As a feat, it was quite super.
Totally agree. Totally. It hit on every note it needed to. It wrapped up everything it needed to. I talked about it like a satisfying end to a run. It was great.
I remember after it's over texting you going, oh my God, they actually pulled it off.
Yep.
Like it was unbelievable that they actually wrapped it up in a satisfying way.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do. A lot of shows don't.
It was a great 10 years. Great 10 years.
It really was crazy.
Yeah.
But good job. And I really had fun watching Smallville for 10 years. And we did it for most of it on iFanboy. So if you probably watched along with us, if you came to the site. And we had a great live chat going during the finale with lots of people involved. And it was good. Yep. Good times.
Now, the other day, I was watching the Thursday night comedies, as I'm wont to do, on Friday, because that's how I do it. And I'm watching Parks and Recreation. And Ron Swanson made some joke. And I just thought, you know what? I like this show more than I like Community.
I've heard that. I've never watched Parks and Rec, but people have said that a lot.
It's funny. I posted on Twitter, and people were like, "Whoa!" And I was like, "No. I'm not saying Community's bad. Community's fucking brilliant. We're going to talk about that in a minute, and I love it, and it's great." But when you're talking about the kind of humor that I like, very subtle character-based humor and just fun jokes, Parks and Recreation is getting stunningly good, and I don't feel like it's getting any of the spotlight that it should be. But
no, the Office is the popular show amongst the population. The Community has the sort of geek insider crowd, and Parks and Rec gets lost in the middle. And you're right, Community is fantastic. It's wonderful. I love it every week. Parks and Rec's been my favorite for a couple of years now.
I mean, and it's the same thing as The Office. Like, it started out those first six episodes, it's like, that was not good. And it wasn't, but they went and they basically retooled all the characters a little bit and made them work better than they had, when they started. And they've got this wonderful, what's the word I'm looking for when you have a lot of people?
Ensemble.
Ensemble cast, exactly. And, like every character's got a funny, just a funny thing to do. And even a character like, Aziz Ansari's character, which should be irritating, they've written him and doled him out in such a way that it totally works. Adding Rob Lowe, who does not get enough credit for being really, 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 really funny. And Adam Scott has been a good move. And then finally, again, Ron Swanson, Nick Offerman.
How does he not have an Emmy?
Funniest guy on TV right now. The Christmas episode where he got the gift and he was trying not to cry, it was the most subtle bit of acting. There was just this, and he didn't overdo it at all, and just that mustache and like the episode where they made the burgers. It was like, here's my burger. This is meat and bread, and I was like, That's perfect. It's just a wonderful comedy.
Yeah. Between Community and Parks and Recreation, it's the best hour of TV.
Yeah, well, that segues into Community, which is my favorite sitcom, even though I'm not watching Parks and Rec. But Community, and despite it's now on hiatus or canceled or who knows what the status of it will be, I think hands down the best show on TV is Community, just because of the inventiveness and the creativity of the show. Like the multiple timelines episode.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Well, I mean that it's a show that started off ostensibly about a group of people at community college and became a show about TV.
Yes.
It's a TV show about TV shows. Yep. And you have to really love TV to like it, which is why it's not very popular.
Yeah.
Because it's really inside baseball, a lot of it. But
the Christmas episode eviscerated Glee. Like to the point where I'm watching, I'm like, oh God, what do the people who make Glee think of this? Like, I was like, it was
nothing, because their show's been renewed for another year.
Yeah, exactly. They're paychecks. Laughing all the way to the bank.
It's a show where you literally have no idea what you're going to get every week.
Yep.
A TV show, there's a certain amount of familiarity. You know what you're going to get. It's comfortable. That's why people like watch it every week. Because Community will literally do a different genre of show every week, and you never know what's coming.
Yep.
It's kind of the most impressive show.
Yeah.
In that the amount of imagination and effort that they're putting into doing something unique all the time is incredibly laudable. I mean, nothing else is doing that to the sort of extent, like, you really get the sense that they're pushing themselves to do things, all the time. And I also, in the same way that we were talking about Parks and Rec, they have rejiggered the characters around, they from where they originally were to where they are now, where they work better. And it's just little things where, at first Troy was the jock, and then like, well, that doesn't really work. So they sort of left that behind a little bit.
They made him a jock with a secret nerd, and now he's totally embraced the nerd side.
Yeah, and then, at first, it's really interesting that Britta was the sex appeal part of the show.
Yeah.
But they've changed her around now that she's not.
Yep.
In the same way. And now Annie is like this weird, like, hidden sex appeal part of the show.
Yep.
This very interesting little thing that they've done here and there with like they're making her really attractive to everybody, but nobody knows it.
Right.
It's just these odd little things.
It's also brilliant things like the Beetlejuice joke, which was exposed online, is in that there was a three-season joke that paid off in season three, and that they mentioned Beetlejuice once every season, and the third time he showed up in the background.
I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, like it's stuff like that that's you're just like, fuck, man.
It's subtle and inspired and just like so creative. Like Dan Harmon is great. Oh yeah, and the Dean, the episode with the making the commercial.
The Apocalypse Now.
Oh God,
Hearts of Darkness.
The Dean is like Ken Jeong or whatever his name was, Chang. Like that was an early breakout, like fun, but I thought they kind of ruined him by taking him out of the teacher kind of role.
Yes,
and they overdid him.
Yeah, totally overdid him, and now he's a security guard, whatever. But like that, he quickly got filled by the Dean, like they use him sparingly or sometimes not too much. But I love
the
Dean cracks me up. I love him. Oh, he's great.
I like John Goodman showing up.
Yeah.
At the whole air conditioner thing.
The dean of the air conditioner school?
Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. It's including using Troy's real life rap personality in the last episode. I mean, it was
that rap was amazing. Childish Gambino, he's great.
He's great. Yeah, I mean, it does so many things and does them so well.
Yeah,
between Community and Parks and Rec, it's a wonderful hour of comedy. Yeah.
Agreed.
Now, someone who was known for being on Thursday Night Comedies was Kelsey Grammer. And this year, I'm Boss on Starz Network. Starz is now making a play to be a content creator. All these cable networks now are trying to be HBO or AMC. But Boss was wonderful. Boss is a show about a Chicago mayor, played by Kelsey Grammer, who in the first scene of the first episode finds out he's got a degenerative neurological disease and he doesn't have much time left. He's going to start, you know, he's going to have dementia. He's going to start losing control of his, you know, movements and things. But he's the most powerful man in Chicago, and he's been that way for a long time. He can't just give it up. So he's trying to maintain hold on his position while knowing he's slowly dying, while having symptoms, while there's political insurgencies around him. It's a political junkie show, kind of show that I think probably, Josh, you would enjoy. It's the complete opposite of The West Wing, whereas The West Wing was very aspirational. This is politics at its best. This is politics at its worst. I mean, they have people murdered who are going to expose them to the press. There's all kinds of back dealing, and there's bribery, and there's sex in the bathroom with someone else on the staff. I mean, it's all kinds of down and dirty politics, in the finest Chicago way. And it's a wonderful drama. It's just very cynical and nasty if you're into that kind of – it probably in that sense more realistic. But great show. Great show on Starz. It's called Boss. It'll be on Netflix. Check it out.
Huh. I really, really enjoyed the first season of Justified very much. And it was pretty good.
But
what we got in the second season so outshined that first season that it's stunning.
Yeah.
It was this season-long story. And one of the things, the first season was sort of episodic in that, you know, each show was a little bit one and done. The second one was more of an overall story, introducing basically a story of this Kentucky crime baron woman. Basically, she controlled, you know, the drugs and the crime in the area. And to be one of the best villains that I have seen on television in such a long time, they just got the writing down really tight. They got the storytelling down, and it's this wonderful conflict that you didn't really expect and you hadn't really seen before. The whole season wasn't based upon having shootouts and fights, which was a lot of fun originally, but it had all of the sort of twists and turns.
Yeah, he didn't. I think in the first season he killed a person. This is Justified the story of a marshal in Kentucky, Raylan Givens, played by Timothy Oliphant. He's amazing.
Yes.
In the first season, I think he killed someone in a cool way every episode. This season,
there was basically
they've made jokes about him not shooting anybody this season. I mean,
there was a version of a gunfight, a shootout, basically an Old West gunfight every episode in the first season, which I always thought was a lot of fun. But this was like a different kind of thing. It was like The Shield.
Yeah.
In that the plot kept twisting, and like you'd think, oh, they're in for it now, and then they'd find a way out of it, but they'd go into a new thing, and they just didn't pull their punches ever, and you know, nobody was safe, and characters would die, and
good friends would start to hate each other. I mean, the point where him and his boss, who were buddies the whole time, now don't really like each other at all. It was sort of heartbreaking, and just kind of like, no, that's his friend.
I think there was one bad episode in the beginning that had something to do with his wife. The thing about her stealing the money, I didn't like that storyline because it was silly. But besides that, it was just a wonderful, complete season of – you don't need to even watch the first season to watch it.
It's on FX, right? It's on FX. It's one of my favorite shows by far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't need to watch this first season to watch the second season.
That's what I'm getting at. Really just a great cast in a unique setting. I didn't even mention Walton Goggins.
Yeah, or the son of the crime boss who was played by the guy from Lost, whose name is
Jeremy. Who's your favorite dude from Lost, Ron? That guy from the end. The
physicist.
Jeremy Davies.
Yeah. Jeremy Davies,
I love him. He's fantastic.
He's a lame, crippled, hillbilly drug kingpin. And then just Walton Goggins doing, you don't know if he's a good guy or he's a bad guy, and he just, Raylan, like he just talks in this amazing voice and accent. And it, like, if you thought that when you watched The Shield, you knew what kind of an actor he was, you have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was impressive every single week, and you don't even know who to root for. You don't know who the good guys are, except Raylan is a good guy, and that's the one thing you can sort of count on through
thing. He's an Old West cowboy.
Yeah, with the white hat, literally. Oh, such a good show.
The villain won an Emmy this year for Best Actress. She should have. Yeah.
She was fantastic. She played the mother in Million Dollar Baby. Like, she's been in a billion things, but Margot Martindale. She sings at this one part, and it just is the strangest thing. It blows you away.
And it really is a look into that culture, that community, the sort of backwoods Kentucky hill culture, which is interesting. Sort of the Winter's Bone culture of everyone stealing meth or marijuana, and there's nothing else. There's no other industry but to deal drugs
and sell off to coal concerns.
Yeah.
Great really stuff.
So my favorite new show of the fall 2011 season has been New Girl on Fox, and it seems to be getting a lot of attention and mainstream pickup. And
it's everyone, my second favorite show, this new show this
year. Yeah, and Zooey Deschanel is the breakout star, and this is her, you know, like Entertainment Weekly's covering it, stuff like that. I love the show, but like, and while she's great and she's totally quirky, it's the supporting cast that gets it for me. Like for those who watch the show, she's a girl, moves into an apartment with three guys, they meet on Craigslist, like that's so she just breaks up with her boyfriend, she's a wreck, and she's kind of dorky and kind of geeky, and she's cute and quirky and all stuff like that. But the dudes that she moves in with, like the Schmidt.
Yeah.
Like that guy's stealing scenes.
Schmidt's the obnoxious sort of type A,
douchey
type.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's also the thing is, I was talking about this the other night because it just aired, and I thought the pilot was a little weak. Yeah. I didn't love it after the pilot, but it's gotten better with every episode, and I love it now.
No, they're adding so many layers. So like while
they've changed all the characters' personalities slowly over the time, which I like.
Yeah, so Schmidt is, you know, comes off as the douchey kind of status, you know, kind of guy, whatever. But like he's also incredibly vulnerable and emotional.
Very sensitive. Yeah.
Yeah, very sensitive. You know, and then Nick is like just like the normal dude. I love that actor. Like he's like very gay, kind of David Krumholz esque or whatever.
Nick started off as kind of, he's going to be the love interest. He's kind of a nice, sensitive, normal guy. But they've kind of made him into like a kind of a weirdo.
Dark. So. He's a little dark, and but they're totally building up the love interest between.
That's going to be a long road, though.
Yeah, it's going to be friends.
They've taken that away in the beginning. Yeah. It was so obvious. Now it's kind of like,
now they've dialed down. But every now and then it comes back, and whatever. And then even like, and I know that there was a different actor. There was a guy coaching the pilot who actually a lot of people really liked. Was Wayans.
Damon Wayans.
Yeah. Well, what happened? His son or something like that.
Show Happy Endings, which they all thought was going to get canceled, so all the actors went and did pilots.
Yeah.
Then it got picked up, so they had to either leave the pilot.
They handled that well. They introduced a new character, and the guy Winston, I actually really like him. I think he adds a lot to it. He adds like a kind of more of a stable kind of reality background.
The episode where he was doing the bells was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. And the show, I mean, every week it's like another thing you don't know what you're going to get. And like I find myself laughing out loud at random things, a little throwaway, like the bells episode when they're leaving and Schmidt goes, "Let me get my Cardi." You know, it's just like out of nowhere. And it was, you know, and it's the kind of show that like my sister and my brother-in-law love, like one of my good friends love, you like. Like no one I know that watches has said a bad thing about it. Like it always is fun. Yep. So New Girl, I mean, yes, I know it's the popular show and stuff like that, but it really does deserve it. It's really a lot of fun.
I'm really glad it's popular. It's very inventive. The Good Wife is a show I didn't watch till this season.
I hate you for watching because I want to watch this show so badly and I can't.
Ron, you will love this show.
No, okay, here's my problem with this fucking show, all right?
Yeah.
It's got everybody that I love, and you know this, right, Connor? It's got Juliana Margulies, who I love from ER. It's got Josh Charles, who I love from Sports Night. It's got fucking Alan Cumming. Yep. It's got like
it's got a guy from Gilmore Girls.
Guy from Gilmore Girls. Like all this shit, it's so great. I can't get it online.
I get it on Netflix. That's what happened. Was when I first moved to Los Angeles, they didn't have cable. I had Netflix still, and I burned through the first three seasons on Netflix.
But through the discs, right?
Yeah, through the discs.
Yeah, I'm not on the. It's not on streaming.
No, but I burned through the discs, and it is a wonderful kind of old school drama. There's family dynamics. There's a great legal stuff. The best stuff is the legal stuff that goes on.
See, it drives me fucking crazy. So CBS only stream. This is the problem. I don't have cable.
Just on their website.
This is the problem. No, they only have the five most recent episodes on their website.
Oh.
Okay.
Because I looked into it to see if it was on Hulu the other day.
No, it's not on Hulu. Season one is available for purchase on iTunes or Amazon, but it's like the HD version is like $53. All right. Amazon doesn't even have the pilot available for streaming, even for purchase. I'm like, I just want to watch this goddamn show and I can't. And you're watching it and I hate you.
And you really need to watch from the beginning.
Exactly.
It builds and builds and builds the character stuff. I mean, you could watch it. It'd be fine, but it wouldn't be as good as unless you watch it from the beginning. And it started off as a high concept, basically Elliot Spitzer show where Chris Noth is the district attorney of Chicago. It's called the state's attorney. And
it's Elliot Spitzer.
He's caught in an affair with prostitutes and his wife. She goes back to work because she's now out on her own. And it deals with a lot of that. First two seasons are a lot of that stuff. But it's less about that now and more just about the characters because that season's sort of over. His scandal's long gone. And Alan Cumming is a genius on the show.
I love Alan Cumming. He's great.
He's amazing.
It's funny every time.
He's Chicago.
Like fucking Alan Cumming. I love Alan Cumming.
He's Chicago's political fixer. And he's funny and he's in your face. And he's one of the people that it gets to be sort of – he gets to cut loose on the show.
So I watched a random episode again on – I was on a flight. I was on a Virgin flight. And it was a short – I think it was coming back from San Diego. It was a short flight, so I didn't have a long time. And I'm like, all right, I'll check this out. And like I didn't know what the fuck was going on, but I loved it. I might break down and buy it. Like, that's how much I want to watch this
show. Watch it on Netflix. That's what I did. Watch it. Get the discs.
I don't get the discs. I'm only on streaming on Netflix.
Oh, then you're screwed.
So add it for $8 and get the discs.
All right. Yeah. Just.
If you
watch them over the course of a month, it'll be less than the $50 you got to pay for
iTunes.
I'm
doing it now. I'm doing it now. Okay. I'm doing it right now.
We're doing a show.
There.
I watched four in a row in one go. It's a fantastic drama. Yeah. This season was a little rocky in the beginning, but they've righted the ship.
Oh, God. I can't wait. Hmm. I can't wait.
See, I don't. Because it's on CBS, so I just don't trust it. I just figure it's for old people.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, totally. I was like, yeah, I thought it was like The Ghost Whisperer.
No, there's lots of dirty sex and stuff going on. I mean, it's quite fun. It's a good show.
You know who did it? Who's like the showrunner? Who are the people? Who are these people?
It's a husband and wife team. I don't know who it is.
Okay. There's one show that should win all the awards.
All of them.
All of them?
All of them.
Louis.
So fucking good.
I like when they jump cut during the things and the pizza's all stuffed in his one cheek.
Yeah, the opening.
and the font, the whole opening is wonderful.
It's amazing.
You know, this is a show that is rightfully loved, but I think the thing that I like most about it is that it is very willing to be whatever it is.
It's raw.
It's honest.
Yeah.
The sitcom episode, the Dane Cook episode, like, wow.
There was a piece in Entertainment Weekly about Louis because he was picked as one of the entertainers of the year. So they had Chris Rock write about him, and he said, first of all, that every comedian watches it, every stand-up comedian, and be that the Dane Cook episode blew the whole community's minds.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe he did it. They couldn't believe Dan Cook went on and did it. And they all have more respect for Dan Cook now. It's a show that's very influential to American comedy in that it influences the comedians.
Yeah. Well, I think we got to eat crow or whatever, but we got to give Josh a little credit because Josh has been talking about Louis C.K. for years. Years.
Yeah, no, he's the best stand-up comedian working in probably the world right now.
Yeah, and he deserves a nod for his recent Beacon Theater release, you know, which I watched the day after it came out. It was that comedy special is fantastic.
I haven't watched it yet, but
can I tell you all the jokes in it now? There's a whole bit where he does.
I don't think you'll do it as well. No, I've seen him live a couple of times, and it's like gut bending over painfully funny. Yeah. He's that good at that part of his job, but this is another thing that he does. Like he
writes
film
it,
school.
He directs it, he edits it himself.
Yeah, he does everything. Yeah.
Look, like he does, it's a DIY show.
Yeah,
he wears his own clothes. And the story behind, you know, how he got the show going is fascinating. He's like, you know, I don't need it to cost a lot. I don't want to have a crew. And I just it's totally like a punk rock TV show
in a way. It totally is. Yeah, God, I love the show, and I love Pamela Adlon.
She's great.
And that storyline of him being in love with her, like,
and they won't give it to you.
Oh, exactly. And the scene where he tells her he loves her, like, oh, that whole episode. And then, oh, it's great. It's so good.
I really enjoyed sort of the highlights, I guess, of the season were the Halloween episode where, as a father, he wants to be protective, but he can't. He just felt so ineffectual. And they let you sit in that for a long time. Like, he can't do anything about it. And that's terrible.
It's
like,
not a flattering show. I mean, you know, most actors are very concerned with their image and how they'll come off on screen. And he does not care how awful he comes off.
He's
and
honest.
It's a very personal and honest thing.
And then obviously you have to give a note to the Afghanistan episode.
Yes.
Where I was like, this is happening right now?
And it was like an hour and a half, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This is a special award-worthy kind of thing you're doing. Yeah. I don't know what award, but it needs some kind of award.
All the awards.
And I liked, you know, like just the relationships that he had with the other people on the tour and like his horrible luck trying to talk to the cheerleader, was it?
Yeah, the girl, yeah.
Oh, and just he's awful at it. It was really something special. I don't think we've seen anything like this.
No, it's amazing.
In a long time. It's like it's all the aesthetics of sort of do-it-yourself web video, but done in a place where more people are going to see it, and it's going to get more recognition.
Yep. So good.
By a guy who's a genius.
A surprise new show for me that I actually ended up liking, which is part of the iFanboy family, actually. Up All Night.
It's a great show.
From NBC. Will Arnett, Christina Applegate, Maya Rudolph. And it was the premise is, you know, they're, you know, couple who has a baby and it just turns their life upside down. And that's totally not kind of the kind of show I would want to watch. But I like Will Arnett.
There are couples late in life who've been like hardcore partiers. And like he was a high-powered lawyer. She's a Oprah Winfrey types, you know, executive producer. And they've lived this lifestyle. Now they've got a baby in their 40s. It's completely bizarre.
And what happened was that I wasn't going to watch it because it was, you know, because it's also, I think, very indicative of society. I think it's one of the shows on TV now that are very reflective of real things that are going on right now.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of the humor is very, like some hip new neighbors moved in next to them. And so they're beefing up their Facebook profile because they want to seem cool. Yeah. Right? And like, so it was like things like that. that and they don't, and it's not done in a way that's not believable. Like, that makes sense. Like, that was a valid kind of plot point. But I wasn't gonna watch it, but then I saw I was on the NBC app. I was just playing with the NBC app, and I saw like a picture of it, and I recognized somebody in it, and Gordon the intern, our friend, I emailed. I was like, is Jennifer on a TV show? And he's like, yes. And so our friend Jennifer Hall is on the show, and she plays Maya Rudolph and Christine Applegate's assistant.
She's the fourth lead on the show.
She steals scenes left and right.
She went to college with us.
She went to college with us. I've known her for years. She's been working, and she was on a show. It was on that George Clooney show, the HBO. Remember that
K
show?
K Street.
Yeah. No, not K Street. The one about actors.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But anyway, she was in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, so she's had some work. But she's like, you know, fourth. She's in the credits, like, and she's great. She still seems. When I first started watching this show, it made me want to kill myself because it's about a life that I don't have. But other than that, like, once I got over that, it's very funny, and now Jason Lee's on it as Maya Rudolph's love interest, and like, it's really good.
What's great is that it's not Will Arnett playing Job, which he's done a lot since as a development. He's a fully fleshed out character who's different, but he's also equally funny.
Yeah.
Into what he's done before.
Well, that was the thing about his last show, which was done by Mitchell Hurwitz, Running Wild, and I tried to watch it. I made it an episode and a half, and I was like, "This is just terrible."
Yeah. The only good thing about that was the neighbor was Peter Serafinowicz, whatever, the British actor.
Serafinowicz.
Yeah, he's great. He's
everything he does. But this show, I think there's been bits of it that have been really good. I think some of the episodes have been better than others. It's episodic. Each episode is a stand on its own thing for the most part. I think I tend to think that Maya Rudolph is. Overdoes it a little.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
And I wish that she had a little more of a realistic tone, because there are crazy people who work in TV, and you can portray that without going over the top, like you're in a sketch, basically. I think sometimes they veer into sketch comedy with it, and I think that doesn't service them as well. But I think Will Arnett is fantastic in this. I think Christine Applegate is really good in this. She's somebody who doesn't. She's won like a ton of awards for shows that I never watched. Basically,
she's been working for.
Yes.
30 years.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Exactly. And she, I mean, she was like, I love Married with Children. She was great on it. Yeah. That's
don't tell mom the babysitter's dead.
Groundbreaking TV in a strange way. Mm-hmm. It's a good show, and some of it's very funny. It's funny because I want that to be my life too, but in the opposite way. And that just they seem to have limitless resources.
Right. Yeah. No.
He's a lawyer.
Like sure they have to deal with the baby, but at least apparently they never have to worry about. I bought you a car. That's great. No one's doing that other show about I can't fucking – because it's not fun. That's why Parenthood, everybody seems to be fucking loaded. Modern Family, oh, don't worry about it. We'll go anyway.
That's a little bit of Louie is like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Up All Night's great. It's great to see Jennifer part of the – and if you go to San Diego, sometimes you might see Jennifer wearing an iFanboy shirt in our little entourage, and you could see her.
That was in the past. Now, too.
No, she'll still be there.
I know. I'm kidding. So, Connor.
Wow. Friday Night Lights ended its NBC run this year. It ended earlier on DirecTV when it was on straight to DirecTV. But five-year run. And also Lex Smallville, an ending that just completely and utterly captured the show and ended it perfectly.
It was such a good show. And
one day, Ron, you're going to watch this.
It was so unexpected because I don't want to. No, listen. There's no reason for you not to watch this.
No, I know there's not. I know there's not. I know. I'm not arguing it. Everyone I know has said the same thing. Just
watch the first episode on Netflix. It's on streaming, and just watch the first episode.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I'm kind of in the middle of 30 something right now.
So is my wife.
is she watching it?
Yeah.
Oh my God! I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, she's totally. What episode she's never she watched to? It. I don't know. She's in the first season somewhere.
Oh yeah, I gotta email her. Okay, thank you.
She's been watching that. But Friday Night Lights is bar none. If not the best, as good as any TV show we've seen, you know, in the last 10, 20 years. That's how good this show is. And I say that from perspective of I don't like football. The whole idea of it, if you were to explain it to me, I wouldn't watch it, which is why no one did and which is why I didn't. But you go back in and I've gotten other people who like sports even less than me to watch it and tear up. I mean, it's just a wonderful TV show with wonderful relationships and characters. And that's the kind of thing I keep saying over and over again. It's really interesting because I feel like I watched a lot of really good TV shows here this year, but we've talked about almost all of them. Like, I actually didn't have that many, didn't watch that much TV show.
Oh, I could spend 3 hours talking about this show.
Yeah, I know. I had a hard time coming up with five. But I'm so glad that I watched this show. If you are a writer or just into stories, you need to watch this show. If you know what, I would go so far as to say, if you've ever thought about acting, you need to watch this show because it's actors who are inhabiting characters and acting so subtly and so perfectly. And then the other thing this show did that was really great is that we've talked about other shows that changed their characters around a little bit because it wasn't working at first. And all of these came out right from the gate fully fleshed out. And everything they did from that point on made sense. And one of the things that this show did was interesting was between the third and fourth seasons, basically they changed settings completely. They reshuffled the deck completely in a way that could have really backfired on them. But
and got rid of almost all the yes. young characters, the kids yes. who you follow just as much as you do the adults. And suddenly you've got a whole set of kids and the ones you loved are gone. But they were just as compelling, just as interesting, mm-hmm. just in different ways.
It was this huge cast of characters who you form a genuine yet false emotional relationship with. You know, when you know Saracen shows up again, I was like, oh, I mean, yeah. really like nutty stuff. And then it ended really well because they had time to plan for it and they had time to tell that story. This is basically all the people who work on Parenthood, but doing a really, really good show.
Yeah. Ooh. Fantastic.
Oh, snap.
Now, finally, we mentioned it almost every season or time we do the show, but Breaking Bad, I think this year officially took the crown of best show on TV from Mad Men with just a absolutely tense season that unfolded perfectly into a final episode that literally blew up and shocked everyone I know who watched it. It was I don't want to talk about what happened because people are still catching up on it, but it was this season was all about the main character Walter's fight with the drug kingpin that he worked for making meth and who would kill who and the multiple attempts to kill each other by each one and just emotionally draining every week. And it's won a lot of awards, and Bryan Cranston's won a lot of Emmys for it, and everyone has deserved. He's fantastic. The show is fantastic. Everything about the show. When it first started, it was kind of the also-ran to Mad Men, but by now it's usurped it as the best show on AMC, probably the best drama on TV.
Yeah. It's hard to find anything to say about it that hasn't been said a billion times over, but it's...
Did you catch up on it?
Yeah. No, I watched it. I had the iTunes season pass, so I watched it the next day every time. First thing I would do, you know, as soon as I could watch it. You know, and Antonio Napa has a bell, so... That's an honest joke for those of you.
Bryan Cranston gets all the attention, but the guy who plays Jesse is just as good, if not better, than Bryan Cranston is.
It's an ensemble thing, at least between the two of them. I think that, I mean, the fact is, I think Vince Gilligan, the guys who write the show, are the ones who are really like plotting something that keeps you. You don't want to use the term "edge of your seat" too much, but I mean, it's as tense of a show as I've ever watched. Every single episode, and then it's like. It's like getting to the end of a Brian K. Vaughan Why the Last Man issue every time. Mm-hmm. And just every issue be like, "Well, no, Nat, what? Oh, you don't want it to be over." It's that thing that keeps dragging you back in and they never disappointed for a moment. I'll watch shows and be like, "Oh, they shouldn't have done that. They should have done." I've never thought that during Breaking Bad. I've never thought they made a bad choice because all the choices are authentic and organic.
True. I agree. It was wonderful. I mean, I miss it. You know, I miss it the same way I miss Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Someday I'll watch that show too.
You know, the funny thing about it is like I really respect it. It's not my favorite thing to watch. I think it's great. I don't want to not watch it, but the tone of it is not just my favorite. But like the quality of it is actually just so high that I don't really care. Like it's just so good. It's better than some other shows that are on that network. It should have been good, but weren't as good.
Oh, I liked it. Anyway, all right. So
I was talking about Hell on Wheels.
Oh, that show's fantastic.
Oh, it's awful.
Oh, no, it's wonderful.
Anyway. I was watching it at the same time I was watching Deadwood, and I think that's a problem.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful show.
So that was the year in TV that we've enjoyed, and there's a lot more that we can go on and talk about TV for hours. We watch too much TV, and I could talk about 30-something, but I won't.
So when you're home working all day, you got something on in the background.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I love watching TV. I just love it. I love that there's always good stuff to watch. And
especially, we're in a golden age of TV.
Especially now not having cable and having tablets and going to the gym and being able to watch it there. And like, so it's like a whole new world of TV all the time.
This is the end of part one. Next week, you can come back for part two. We're going to be talking about other stuff that's going on, video games, books, music, and a little bit of comics. Well, just a little bit at the end. So make sure you come back for that. In the meantime, go to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show and the stuff in here. I'm sure that you will have things to say. You can tell us about the other shows and movies and all the stuff that you liked. You can go to twitter.com/ifanboy to follow us, or go to facebook.com/ifanboy as well. We normally do a video show, and we will again, but right now that show's on hiatus. In the meantime, there are hundreds of episodes in the can that you can watch and enjoy, so please do that.
And you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line 888-FANBOY-326-2697. If any questions or comments, you know that if you listen to the show every week, the Pick of the Week show, which is normally here, we do emails and voicemails on the show. So call with your questions or discussion topics, and we'll do them on the show if they're good.
Yeah, rock on. And if you like what we do, and if you've enjoyed iFanboy over 2011 or in the past 10 years of iFanboy, tell people about it. Help spread the word. Tell your comic book store. Tell your friends. Go to iTunes, write a review that helps people discover the show, and write a review for all the other great podcasts in the iFanboy family, like Word Balloon and Tom vs. Aquaman and 11 O'Clock Comics and Around Comics and all of our buddies in the comics podcasting world. Help spread the word. It's great to get out there and help people discover iFanboy. So that's it for this week's show. Next week, we'll have part two. Talk about more stuff that we're enjoying in 2011. But so until then, I am Ron.
I'm Connor.
I am Josh. Thank you very much, everyone.
Dreaming of a white Christmas.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.